Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, and I'm coming to you from an altitude of 5,280 feet, and that's where you'll be coming in September to Mile High. Right now, I am super thrilled because I'm always super thrilled every time I get to be face-to-face, so to speak, with this wonderful, heartfelt, loving, incredible being of a chiropractor, Dr. Monique Andrews, who runs the Prana Foundation, at one point worked for some chiropractic school and has been a multi-time chiropractic presenter. She's a neuroscientist and a super principle-focused chiropractor, as she says, 33 principles and then some. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Monique Andrews.
Oh, thank you so much, Danny. Your face for me equals joy. And I love hopping on these chats with you. So thanks again for inviting me.
Well, you just made my day because I was meditating this morning and focusing on my meditation thought was joy. So I don't know how you knew that. This is great. We pulled it into the field.
That's right.
And so, I was thinking about connecting with you and also all the great times we had at Mile High and also at Berkshire's and other events, and how much I adore getting to spend time with you and also the Tamara. And really, anytime you can be in the same place as Dr. Monique and Dr. Tamara, you need to be there because it's always a special time. And I was just thinking as I was like, what am I going to discuss? The first thing that came up to me is, Dr. Mo, why are they wanting to take the neurology out of chiropractic?
Wow, that's what you're leading with.
I figure we're going to have fun.
I think, that's such a political move. I'm just going to say it. It's very political. And I think it has a lot to do with insurance. I think it has a lot to do with fear. It has nothing to do with science because we have more and more science that show, obviously, the nervous system needs to be included in chiropractic because it is. Like for me, it's such a break from my reality every day to think that there are chiropractors that don't want to talk about neurology, that only want to talk about chiropractic as a musculoskeletal treatment. I think that for sure, if we were to continue in that direction, and if I have anything to do with it, we will not. But if we were to continue at that direction, it would incredibly limit us and make us subservient to the conventional medical model.
Yeah. And hey, I led with it because I figured we might as well get right into it. And here's the thing. I want people to notice something that you just said that's super important, which is if I have anything to do with it, we won't. Look, there's certain people that do things in chiropractic because it's their business motive. I know through and through that is not where Dr. Mo lives. She is very much focused on concern for the future of our profession, its graduates, the practicing chiropractors, and same thing with me. Like, I have no reason to put on Mile High. I do not need to do it, but I'm like super concerned about people learning the art of chiropractic and they're taught as something musculoskeletal. How do we help shift the narrative in chiropractic away from pain and a musculoskeletal focus to a chiropractic focus?
Yeah, I think that, we slowly need to build an army of chiropractors that actually understand the science. Like, I think the most critical piece of what we do as chiropractors, obviously, besides correcting subluxation, removing interference to the nervous system, is our ability to communicate the message. And I think when you have a really deep understanding of the science, you can communicate with passion, but when you really understand, then you can also communicate with certainty and confidence in a way that people listen to you, that people believe what you're saying because you know it to be true. And the more people that we have sharing that message, that when you adjust the spine, you actually are impacting the nervous system, I think that's the way through.
Yeah. And I think that's a vital thing. People, for the longest time, I know you were exposed to this, I was exposed to this, learn like the way to practice is, memorizing a magic script, right? And yeah, there's dialogue and communications are important, but there's a completely different level of practice when you own what you're saying and you have certainty and conviction and the person you're across from you knows you own it. And they like, oh, wow, this person knows what they're talking about. And that's why science is so important. And, objective outcomes. I personally feel like that was a turning point for me because there was a point in practice. Well, no, I won't say in practice, in school, where I thought I'd be the long-haired, tie-dye practicing chiropractor. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I was like, I'll never use any of this stuff. And now, to me, those outcome assessments are vital. How do you feel about outcome assessments in practice?
Yeah, like you say, I think it's vital. It doesn't objective measure doesn't sound like a very sexy thing, but let me tell you, if something has value, then you should be able to measure it. And in fact, there's a quote that's like, if you can't measure it, it doesn't have value or something like that. Here's the thing about objective measures. It allows you to not just tell people, but to show them. Now, whether that's heart rate variability, thermography, even outcome assessment tools and screens like an SF-36, a stress index, you name it, there are lots of ways to do it. And you don't have to be a evidence-based chiropractor, right? An evidence-informed chiropractor will take objective measures, combine that with their experience as a doctor and the patient's goals, and give them a comprehensive understanding of what you're doing, why you're doing it, and the impact that you're having. We need to be able to show people. You know, your average patient that comes into your office, they don't have the understanding and education that we do as chiropractors. If you say, look, we are making improvements, we're creating change so that your nervous system can function at its optimal, I think if you can go one step further and say, and here, look, this is how we actually measure it. I think that's invaluable. And I think every single chiropractor should use some form of objective measure in their practice. I'm not just saying that because we're doing a course this weekend. I'm saying it because, and I don't care what the objective measure is, there should be an objective measure because I think, you put your money where your mouth is when you do say, hey, look, I'm telling you, and oh, by the way, let me show you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that involves something that is important that chiropractors tend to shy away from in many ways, which is this word accountability that chiropractors tend to be a little bit phobic about. And so often people do an objective measure at a screening or an initial visit and then never do it again, which I think is a tragedy because you're losing the opportunity of the practitioner growing. So have you had the experience, Dr. Mo, of like someone coming in care for you where they say, no one's ever done this before?
Yeah, all the time. And I haven't been in practice for a few years now, but I was in practice for about a dozen years when I first graduated from chiropractic school 20 years ago next month. And it would happen all the time. And we used objective measures in our practice. And I just got a letter from a student the other day who said, he said, thank you so much for teaching me the science. And he's been in practice for a few months and he's focusing on neuroscience. And he said, most of his patients say to him, no other chiropractor has ever focused on the neuroscience before. And he uses objective measures as well. And it blows my mind that there are chiropractors out there not talking about neurology, not talking about the nervous system. I don't even understand how you can practice.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. And it's also something for people that are listening or watching whatever way this is. And by the way, however you're watching or listening, whether it be YouTube or Stitcher or iTunes, make sure you hit subscribe so you never miss any Mile High Tick. But here's the thing. So it's the thing that differentiates you. It's not that much of a bar to raise. Sadly, I wish the bar was higher for chiropractors in general, but sadly, the bar is not that high and you can be differentiated so easily with some objective outcomes and have certainty and then be able to communicate the science and then actually show that what you said was going to happen actually happen, you know, for care and as an outcome. So
then, I mean, I've never met a patient that said to me, that's too much information. Ever. Never.
Right, right. So then this thing, the art of chiropractic, right? So there's a philosophy, science, and art. What would you, how do you define what makes up the art to you?
Wow, great question. I think the art really is the confluence of our assessment and our approach, right? Like, of course, the adjustment is the centerpiece. It's the conduit by which we facilitate freedom of the innate intelligence of the body to do what it does. But we cannot get to the point of the adjustment without doing an analysis, an assessment. You know, the adjustment is a moment in time. How do you know where? How do you know when? How do you know when not to? All of that is part of our art. That taken together with our ability to communicate our message, our purpose, our why. That's art, right? Yeah, I think that's how I would define it.
And so important. What is it? How does it make what you feel when you hear that chiropractors look for their success in practice or measuring whether the adjustment was effective by whether there was a noise?
Yeah, well, that's just an antiquated idea. That's, I mean, you can, my response is to laugh a little bit because it, you know, that it's just not what it's about. You know, there are, we have hundreds of techniques at this point, you know, probably 50 or so at the centerpiece of chiropractic. And everything ranging from obviously network spinal to, you know, Gonstead. And sometimes there's a cavitation, sometimes there's not. You know, I practice a technique that essentially outlawed Toughness. And, you know, we didn't, there was no cavitation. That was not, that's not what it's about. You know, the body is, the nervous system, the innate intelligence of the body is extremely sophisticated, elegant system that doesn't require a snap, crackle, pop to make it do its magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And the science supports that, by the way, because it used to be an argument that you needed a cavitation in order to create facilitation of mechanoreceptor and proprioceptor stimulation. And actually now there's data to suggest that's not the case, that you do get even things like, you know, changes in somatosensory evoke potentials with tonal work. So there you go.
Right. And then there's always the person that says, well, but wait, how can that move a bone? You know? And like, well,
again, yeah, I mean, that's, it depends. If your model, let's be fair, right, Danny, yep. Because if your model is such that you use HVLA and the desire is to move a bone, then that's your model. And right. And that works too. Right. It's just that there's a whole spectrum of what's possible and there are different ways to do it. You know, Reggie Gold used to always say, it doesn't matter how you do it. If you hit him in the ass with a shovel, if you're correcting subluxations, it works.
Mm-hmm. And yes, and I say the same thing is like, well, who moves the bone? You know,
it's
I never thought of that. I'm moving the bone. So now, how with what the average chiropractor, what can the average chiropractor in practice be doing to support, advance, to contribute to research?
That's another great question. You know, I think aside from doing practice-based research yourself, and while some people are inclined towards that and some aren't, you know, you can do case studies or just support organizations that are doing great research. Two organizations that I recommend or that we support, that I personally support financially, are the Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation Research and the Australian Spinal Research Foundation. In fact, ASRF right now has a really cool thing where they're supporting docs out in the field in practice to do case studies. So, you know, if you're interested in doing it, there are ways we can help you to find out how to do research in your practice. Or, you know, put your money where your mouth is and actually support it. And, oh, by the way, probably the most important piece, start reading some research And again, that will enhance your certainty and your understanding. And that's what we do in Dr. Moneau's, obviously, is really break down. This is what's happening in, you know, current chiropractic science today. This is why it's impactful for your patients. And oh, by the way, this is how to talk about it.
Now, you mentioned something about a program this weekend. I didn't know that when we were scheduling this podcast. What do you have coming up?
Yeah, so Dr. Mack and I, under the Prana Foundation, we are doing a 3-hour workshop on applying heart rate variability in practice. And so, you know, we get docs all the time. What equipment should I use? Should I get HRV? Oh, I bought it, but I don't really understand how to use it. And so we created a course basically to help people figure out what's the best equipment for me based on my practice, my patient base, and what's the best way for me to communicate to my patients so that we can get the best outcomes. And so that's a live workshop happening this Saturday. And then if you can still, even if you can't make the workshop, people can still buy it and get the recording.
Well, that's great. And so tell me more about the Prana Foundation. I don't necessarily know too much about it. And I'm sure other people watching and listening will want to know.
Oh, thanks, Danny. You know, my wife and I started the Prana Foundation about a year and a half ago. And essentially what it has evolved into is an international foundation that supports students, new docs, and even seasoned docs, but we're sort of more on the earlier end of the spectrum for docs. And what we do is we provide an engaged community, and through education, through mentorship, through our service retreats, but it's really become an international phenomenon. And we have students and docs from all over the world that come together in some of our mentorship groups or on our retreats and take our courses. And we, you know, for example, we're trying to make more and more information accessible to students for free. You know, just this year, I dropped my neurology of subluxation class. 2,000 students from as far away as South Africa, Ireland, Chile, all over the world came together to do this course. And this is something I'm able to do through the foundation, is to give more and more away. And our long-term vision is that through the foundation, we offer free courses to all students everywhere, all the time. I just did the same thing in Dr. Moneau's. I gave away 25 student scholarships. You know, we know that students aren't getting all three facets of the stool of chiropractic, the science, art, and philosophy, through their educational programs. And that's not endemic to any one institution. None of them is perfect. And we just want to try and fill some of those gaps through the Prana Foundation.
Which is wonderful. And it's so, so needed. And I know you, I know myself, I know Dr. Mack, I know several others that are our colleagues and friends, that why they put their energy in is because of how much we have a concern about the future of chiropractic and where it's going and how we can contribute to that. You know, often people talk to you, put you in a science box bubble. So let's switch a little bit to philosophy and business too. Also, you just talked about that, you know, stool, right? Philosophy, science, and art. And so business, since you said, you know, may not get all of those three, how is being stronger philosophy, science, and art end up impacting business in terms of success and practice? And the reason why I'm asking that is, you know, and I know, students have a price over their head of what they owe. So they get very concerned about that. So they'll say, well, philosophy, science, art don't matter. I just got to do well in marketing or something.
Well, you know, you could be a great marketer, but if you suck in one of the other three facets, the stool is going to fall over. This is what we do, because, you know, we have mentorship groups in the foundation, and some of what we do is business. You know, we have a program that's called Transitions, where we take new docs just graduated or about to graduate, and we go through, how do I take what I've learned? Let's fill some of the gaps that you haven't learned. How do I become successful? Because you're right. It's not enough to just understand the science or have a passion about the philosophy. If you haven't created a formula to put that together in a way where you don't just survive, but you thrive from a business perspective, then it doesn't matter. You know, what we can't have is people graduating and then not being successful to the point where they're getting second jobs or they're not in practice. You know, women, for example, so chiropractic colleges are graduating 50% women right now. But if you look 5 years out, only half of them are in practice. That means we're graduating 50%, but only 25% of chiropractors in practice after 5 years are women. Now, a lot of people say, oh, it's because they're having babies. It's not true. You know, they are often the primary nurturer of the family, but we need to be creating, we need to get creative around what practice looks like. And it doesn't look today what it looked like in the 80s. You know, we have more and more young chiropractors, for example, that are interested in things like mobile practice, right? What we need to do as seasoned chiropractors is support our young so that they too can be successful. And their idea, new graduates today, their idea of success is not the same as the 1980 chiropractor's idea of success. You know, their life is about enriching experience. Now, does that mean that they don't want to make money? Absolutely not. It's just, it's a different perspective. And I think we need to get very creative in how we can support our young doctors. And instead of eating them alive with horrible contracts and, you know, less than desirable associateships.
Right. Can you say something about the student scholarships before I get to the philosophy question, so people know about the student scholarships?
So we have scholarships through the Prana Foundation, and for Dr. Monod's, Dr. Monod's runs every 3 months, and I usually give away, you know, two or three scholarships. And this time what I did was I said, I'm going to give away a student scholarship for every doc that signs up for my program. And so we didn't quite get to 25, but I wanted to make that number. And so I just, over 200 students applied, and we gave 25 of them a scholarship. We do same thing with our foundation. Every program that we offer, we give away so many scholarships because we want to make it available to more people. Eventually, we want to get to the place with our foundation where our other, you know, revenue streams are successful enough that we can make all of our programs free to all students everywhere. And that's our long-term vision.
Excellent. Excellent. That's so outstanding. It'll make a huge impact in the future of chiropractic, which is what's a concern, you know, especially if it's in this direction of musculoskeletal. We don't, you know, we teach manipulation and orthopedic and neurological checks as the only outcome assessment. You know, that's got to change, especially when you look at, I get worried. Tell me if you have this, tell everybody if you have the same worry as I do. I get concerned when I see that, you know, I don't know the exact number, 80, 90% of graduates graduating from a school that doesn't teach subluxation and adjustment.
Yeah, well, that's terrifying. You know, that's, yeah. I mean, this last year, that's what happened to me in at the end of last year when I was invited to speak at a chiropractic college, and a big chiropractic college. Mm-hmm. And students invited me to speak on a science night they were having, and I was mm-hmm. going to give a presentation on the neurology of subluxation, and the school wouldn't allow me to come and speak about neurology. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it wasn't the word neurology they didn't like, but maybe it was the word subluxation. Maybe it was me. I don't know. But that's unfathomable.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you a little fun fact. The first time had the joy of being banned from campuses. The first time I got banned from a campus, I was actually a student. I was going to speak at Logan on campus, and they said I couldn't. And I was like, I'm a student. Like, I'm already banned.
You know? Wow, how much fear.
You know, I was like, and coming from someone who went to NYU, where people spoke on all kinds of things, on all spectrum, you could go to someone, Reggie used to talk about this, you'd go to a major university, have someone speak on pro-Judaism and anti-Judaism the same day in the same room, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I think the censorship is something that's permeated our existence to a level previously unknown for all of us today. And, you know, with the current situation. So yeah, it's beyond. Yeah.
So we talked a business question. Let's ask a philosophy question, especially since you have one of my favorite green books there behind you. So what
first edition?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Here's what I'd like to ask is, do you have a favorite principle of the 33 principles?
Oh, I should have been prepared. I love the, is it 23 is adaptation?
I don't know. I'd have to grab it to pick it up.
Okay.
Might be. Is it?
I can look right here. And I'll grab you this one. This is a good one. Take a look at this.
This is specific, volume 18, but I got to show you something, Mo.
Oh, wow. That's pretty sweet.
That's pretty cool. Look at what's the property of the school. The Reavers School of Kairos, Herb Reavers.
Wow. Amazing.
Pretty cool. I hold on to that one dearly. So let's see, Principle 23. Is it bad that we're thumbing through to know that? I think it's okay.
My head's filled with a lot of things. When I was in school, I had the numbers all lined up, but.
Yeah, I hear you. So principle number 23 is, it's fine to me. The function of innate intelligence.
26.
26 is comparison of universal and innate forces, but adaptation was 24. Is that what you said?
I was off by one.
Favorite?
Yeah.
Okay, 24. So why is 24 the limit of adaptation, number or whatever? Why is it your favorite?
You know what? So chiropractors talk about adaptability a lot and adaptation and our ability to respond. Like this is the job of your brain is to interpret the environment, its internal and external environment, and create a response. And our ability to adapt to our environment, physical, mental, emotional, whatever the stressors are, I think really is a true measure of health in our nervous system. So adaptation. I think it's one of the biggest gifts that we can actually communicate to our patients as the principles. A lot of the principles are really about our deep understanding and our ownership, not necessarily something that we're sharing every day with our patients. It's one of the principles that we can be talking and communicating about that I think truly represents the impact of chiropractic, which is our ability to help people adapt to their environment, internal and external.
And right now there's a lot of adaptation needed in the world, perhaps more than any time I've experienced since I've been alive or see globally. So, you told us, before we started this at the moment, one of your favorite quotes, at the moment of commitment, the universe conspires to assist you. Can you say something about that? That's a really powerful statement.
Isn't it a powerful quote?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, our ability to manifest our reality is only limited by how passionate we are about our intention and our purpose. And I see this time and time again in my life, in the life of docs that I mentor. At the moment of commitment, the universe conspires to assist you. And Dispenza talks about this too, right? Donnie talks about this, right? Mm-hmm. So if you put it into the field, it already exists. If it is in your body, in your mind, in the field, it already exists. We just had this happen this morning. You said you meditated about joy and I saw your face. And the first thing I thought was joy. I felt in my body was joy. You manifested that at the moment of commitment, right? I just see it happen all the time. And I think it's easy to be pessimistic. It's easy to be cynical, to be bitter right now. And there's two sides to that, which is the other piece is, if you want it, what is that Field of Dreams quote, right? If you build it, they will come.
Well, and also there's, when I read that quote from Goethe, I don't know if I said it right, Goethe?
Goethe.
Oh, see.
You're not alone, Danny. Lots of people get that one.
Yeah, so it's fine. I'm perfectly humble with any mistakes I made. I'm no problem. When I thought of that, when I read it, first thing I thought of was The Alchemist, because it's a primary principle. And Paulo Coelho is one of my just most powerful, impactful authors. I've read so many of his books, if not nearly all of them, just really impactful. So in terms of thinking and coherence. Mm-hmm. So coherence is so vital to neurology and to chiropractic and this concept of the universe conspiring to assist you. Would it be too much to ask how you see those come together?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked, actually. And in fact, it ties really nicely into this conversation about heart rate variability. You probably have heard of the HeartMath Institute, mm-hmm. and they've put together a really great program and discussion around how the heart works, that the heart's not just a metronome, right? And that in fact, it emits mm-hmm. electromagnetic radiation that is measurable, that there's a coherence that's in alignment even with the radiations that come from the planet. Mm-hmm. And that in fact, they did these really cool studies and they looked at heart rate variability in people using coherent breathing, which basically is a very synchronous 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, inhalation, exhalation, and looking at how that elevates coherence or heart rate variability in people. But not only did it elevate it in the people practicing the breathing technique, but even in, like, we'll call them an innocent bystander, so people not doing anything to elevate their coherence, it actually elevated the coherence of people around them. My field impacts your field. Well, it's all the one field, but my coherence impacts your coherence. Mm-hmm. So it's even a greater argument for trying to elevate that for everybody. Every single person that you help in your practice, you're impacting everybody around them too.
Right. Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that because especially the cardiovascular part, the heart rate variability, a lot of people, I mean, some people know that I teach networks, some don't, but that the science around that and the oscillation of the heart and the nerve system is central to the research and network of these oscillators coming into alignment and working on a person to a way that you want to adjust them to get increase in coherence of their nerve system and their cardiovascular system. And then that uplifting everybody around them because they're a more coherent being, you know? So really,
I think a lot of people don't even understand that the heart kind of has its own brain, right?
Right.
That the heart brain, it drives itself. So if we have the heart oscillating over here, the brain's oscillating, how do we bring that together? I think network is, you know, likely the very best approach to not only doing that, but really expressing it. And, you know, Donnie did some amazing heart rate variability research back in the day, right?
Right. Absolutely. And actually the advancement of the nerve system in network, and I didn't mean to go off that tangent, but since we talked about it, is that we want to see the heart's rhythm coherent with the oscillators of the cervical spine and the sacral spine, and those develop, and mathematically we've seen that happen.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Which is amazing. Once you see that and see it produce, it's over the person's increases their adaptability.
I think a lot of people...
Go ahead.
I think a lot of people don't know about all that really cool science that's been done in network, actually.
I think a lot of people don't. And also, that's also because I think a lot of people don't know the science in chiropractic, period.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I so encourage people to follow up with the Prana Foundation and the work that you're doing and helping them educate about, because it goes back to, if they just think the art of chiropractic is hearing a noise and something popping or cracking or bone moving to right, that may be part of it, but there's more, you know?
Yep. So much more.
So tell us more. Lastly, what programs do you have coming up?
Well, we have our applied HRV in practice coming up this Saturday, and that's with three CE credits. You know, my Dr. Monod's program is constantly running. People can jump into that anytime. And very cool, we're doing the Prana Foundation, you know, we do these retreats in Costa Rica. We're doing our very first doctors only retreat with CE. So this is for women doctors, women chiropractors can come and get 10 CE credits. That's coming up in October. And more information will be coming out about that, but we'll drop a link and you can see how you can sign up for that.
Outstanding. And we'll put it in the podcast notes as well.
Awesome.
So, which will be awesome. Well, before we sign off, is there any last thing you want to say to everybody?
No, I would just say, you know, keep, stay positive. And I don't mean that in like a lame positive psychology way, but we're going to get to the other side of this current level of disrupt that we're in. And to just keep holding that light, you know, there isn't that idea that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think the tunnel is an illusion and that we are the light. And just to keep you know, bringing that forth.
You know, I think I read something earlier this morning, and it was about downplaying the negative and amplifying the positive. And that would be a good chiropractic principle: decrease the destructive survival values and increase the constructive survival values. And that's a focus of what we do. So thank you so much for taking your valuable time to help chiropractors around the world, and also for joining us on this podcast and joining us at Mile High Live in September. We look forward to seeing Dr. Mack and yourself there September 23rd to 26th. If you haven't grabbed your seats, good time to do that, because the rates just go up as you go closer. And we look forward to seeing everybody at on higher ground as we uplift the art. It's everything's about the art this year, the art of chiropractic at Mile High. And we look forward to seeing you there, Dr. Mo.
Thanks so much. Cannot wait to be there and actually, you know, be together with our people.
Yeah, with hugs people. And smile. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Keep chained. Everybody, thank you. And, you know, reserve your seats at milehighchiroregistration.com. Hit subscribe on the podcast, and keep changing spines, lives, and minds with chiropractic.